Kunsthaus Zurich. Welcome to this podcast linked to the exhibition Earth Beats, the Changing Face of Nature, created by Sandra Gianfreda and Katrin Hoog. In 12 episodes, you will hear, among others, ecofeminists, writers, glaciologists, fashion designers and economists who take us right into the middle of a highly topical debate about climate and the environment. My name is Katrin Hoog, and in this episode, Christoph Keller is talking with Vandana Shiva. She holds a PhD in physics and is based in Delhi. She is a world-known environmental activist, advocate of food sovereignty, and ecofeminist. Shiva has written more than 20 books and is often referred to as Gandhi of Grain for her activism associated with the anti-GMO movement.
Well, my name is Dr. Vandana Shiva, and my function is to be an Earth citizen, and an Earth citizen who recognizes that the Earth beats.
So what does that mean for you to be an Earth citizen?
Well, for me, it means three things. It, of course, means that my training, my intellectual scientific training as a quantum physicist and quantum theorist on the principles that showed that the Cartesian model, the Newtonian model of classical physics, is so wrong. It doesn't tell you about the Earth. It is not the Earth story. It is the colonial story. It is the ballistic missile story. But it doesn't tell you the story of how the Earth beats. And quantum theory tells you much more closely how the Earth is interconnected. Everything is non-separable. And the second beautiful thing about the Earth is there are no fixed entities. The seed is a little seed, and it grows into a giant tree. That is potential. That is potential. So that is the first element of my Earth citizenship, to think with the Earth, to think through non-separation and interconnectedness. The second thing is to recognize that the new sciences are teaching us in biology, in ecology, that diversity is the organizing principle of the Earth, that the Earth has an urge to be diverse. Dominant systems have an urge to create monocultures. They have an urge to create monopolies. Nature has the urge to freedom, self-organization, diversity. And the third principle is knowing all this, to act responsibly, to work within the limits of the Earth, because these are ecological scientific laws, and a science that denies these laws is unscientific. And the very important part is, since all of the Earth beings are fellow beings, and so these three things together is what has shaped my thinking and my activism.
One of the issues that are very important for you is ecological justice for farmers and ecofeminism.
So justice to farmers is ecological justice, because farmers, their main work is care for the earth. Ecofeminism for me is realizing that we had been given blinkers. Yeah, capitalist patriarchy, the merger of capital and patriarchal power, of the economically powerful behaving as if they were dominant patriarchs and could bully everyone, that the blinkers they gave us were, first blinker, the earth is dead. She doesn't beat. Second blinker, people who work with the earth are stupid. They're primitive. They're barbarians. They need to be civilized to become part of the war against the earth. Third blinker, that violence against the earth is progress. Now, removing those blinkers and just celebrating the earth in her reality is ecofeminism. It's removing the blinkers.
So you would say the role of women especially is important for the conservation of seeds and nature. The principle of women is crucial to preserve what we have as earth and nature.
I woke up to this realization that women are central for the protection of biodiversity, of seed, of an agriculture of care, which agriculture means the care for the earth. Through my life experience, I saw women of Chipko rising to protect the forests. Today, I'm working with women farmers because Indian farmers are rising, but the Indian women farmers are rising in creating an alternative of saving seeds and becoming seed sovereign because they have always been the seed keepers. The Monsantos of the world had nothing to do with seed. They were warmongers. They were war chemical manufacturers. They've tried to engage with the seed issue through monopoly and patents. And it is really the WTO rules and my trip to Geneva that woke me up to that issue. But women are not just seed keepers. I have given talks and written books for the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, that most farmers of the world are women and most food is produced by women on small farms because women don't produce commodities for trade and profits. Women produce nourishing food that both takes care of the earth and their families. So these principles will have to be the principles of a future of humanity, if humanity has to have a future. Otherwise, on the warmonger part, we can see the future closing. Everyone's predicting 100 years from now, human species extinct like the other species. And we need a better way to live, and women are showing the way.
Women are showing the way. There's one woman in your life, Vandana Shiva, that has been very important to show the way you could go and you might, perhaps you should go. And this was your mother. Can you tell a story about how your mother influenced your path in life?
Well, my mother has, of course, influenced my path because she brought me into this world. I wouldn't be without her. But, you know, she came back to India, what became India separate from Pakistan as a refugee, because she was working as an inspectress of schools at a very high level. And then the partition happened, the line happened. And she built her life all over again as a farmer. And she showed me that after being a highly educated woman, farming is a higher vocation. She chose that. When I wanted to leave academic work because I was saving the forests, I was topping the mines with helping communities, and I was saying I can do so much more by being an independent person in service of the earth and communities, she said, take the cowshed. So the research foundation I started in 82 started from my mother's cowshed. My mother taught me three things. First, no one can tell you that you are less than them. You are yourself, and you are the best to know who you are. Second, never give up courage. There is no power bigger than your power, the power of your conscience. Be fearless. And the third is love simplicity. You know, she spent her life in two saris. And towards the end of her life, she asked me, she said, yeah, I was in Bangalore, beautiful saris. She said, you can, you know, bring me some saris, bring me 4 or 5 saris. And these beautiful silk saris, she wore them and then put them aside and said, you can take them. I just wanted to see if I had any attachment to this stuff. And frankly, life in simplicity is richer.
So living in simplicity and living a simple life as a path we all should go, and you have been going as well in all your work and in your life. So how is life in simplicity related to one of the big issues we have today, and this is climate change? How would you interrelate simplicity and the issue of climate change?
So simplicity begins with production. What's the simplest way to produce? If I can produce with these hands, I am producing with simplicity. That's why Gandhi pulled out the spinning wheel and said, we will fight British colonialism through the simplicity of the human, of the spinning wheel, and deal with the satanic mills that are enslaving the whole world for raw material, for slaves, the Africans taken to North America to work on cotton plantation, grabbing the indigenous people's land. That was the opposite of simplicity. The spinning wheel was simplicity. I learned from the spinning wheel the simplicity of the seed. Shooting a gene with a gene gun to make a plant resistant to glyphosate is complicated. Simplicity is to let the seed grow and give you a million seeds and then share them. But simplicity in consumption means knowing what your consumption has cost. So having the lowest footprint, but that means that you have to make having a lower footprint a higher value on life, and that is simplicity. And everyone has said, live simply so others may simply live. Gandhi said that. Gandhi also said, the earth has enough for everyone's needs, if everyone's simple, but not a few people's greed who want to extract and extract and extract, and now the sad people sitting in Geneva want to put biodiversity and seed and land on portfolios for the billionaires to make more money out of speculation and out of treating these as assets for financialization. So simplicity is truth. Simplicity is closeness and intimacy. Simplicity is working the way the earth works. She doesn't complicate things. She makes things complex. But complexity is dealing with multiple relationships. Complication is creating ruptures so that you can extract more. And simplicity creates joy of life because it gives you freedom. You're not, as a consumer, you're not hankering for more and more and more and never knowing enoughness. As a producer, you are working with the earth on her principles.
One of the basic thoughts in your work is that this simplicity is embedded in local farmers. So, Vandana Shiva, my question would be, what can we learn from these local farmers you are defending and you are working for on a daily basis and also in your scientific work and in your activist work? What can we learn from these farmers?
I can only share with you what I have learned from the farmers, and it's the farmers who opened the door for me to learn from the earth. The first is, no true farmer grows a monoculture. Commodity-producing systems impose on farmers monocultures of commodities. But commodities don't feed the world. They go to make biofuel and animal feed. And that economy works on subsidies. And for that, you have to burn the forest and the Amazon and burn the Indonesian rainforest for palm oil. This is not a food economy. So first, local farmers grow diversity. And to grow diversity, you have to be a very sophisticated co-creator. Because to work with 12 crops or 9 crops, which is the name of Navdanya, the movement I started, it means 9 seeds. To work with 9 seeds, the 9 seeds work in complexity, but when you work with them nonviolently, you have to become part of that complexity and nonviolence. So I've learned nonviolent farming from the farmers. The second is, you can't keep taking from the earth. You can't keep taking. You have to give back. But a tiny bit of what the earth gives, you give back as organic matter. And then the earth gives you abundance forever. So this is the law of return. And the third very important principle, and that's why the Indian farmers have been on the streets since 1991, when the globalization and neoliberalism imposition started, is autonomy, self-organization, self-rule, freedom. This self-organization was the basis of Gandhi's fight for freedom. He called it Swaraj. In science, it is called the principle of self-organization, autopoiesis. Small farmers are autopoietic with the earth. Industrial agriculture is a dictatorship of the chemical cartel, working against the laws of the earth, just extracting and extracting and extracting from the earth as well as farmers, leaving the earth poorer, which is why we have desertification, we have climate change, we have species extinction, and from the farmers, which is why small farmers are disappearing.
There is one principle, as you mentioned, Geneva, that is administered and managed, especially in Geneva, in the context of the GATT and later on the WTO. That is the principle of ownership by multinational through patents and rights on seeds. So tell me how this system of property rights has influenced and affected the world of farmers today in India especially.
Well, it was the GATT, which later became the WTO, which became the focus of my attention in 1987 when I was in Geneva and the chemical industry at that time, not Syngenta, Ciba, Geigy, and all the others were talking about genetically engineering seed in order to take patents and to ensure that patents on seed would be across the world so no farmer would save seeds. And they talked about the year 2000, where all seeds would be GMOs, all seeds would be patented, no farmer would have their own seed. That's my journey of the seed and seed freedom. They wrote a law called the Trade-Related Intellectual Property Rights. And Monsanto has gone on record to say, we drafted this, that seed has to be owned as property. I was at those meetings in 87. I said, but you don't invent the seed, and patents are given for inventions. But seed is not your invention. It is a co-invention of nature, the earth, and the farmers who have evolved the seed in partnership with the earth. So I started Navdanya and Seed Saving. I started to work with my government and with our parliament to ensure we would write laws that say seed is not an invention. And Article 3J of patent law recognizes that. But Monsanto sneaked into the country illegally and lied to Indian seed companies to say we have a patent. And the Indian seed companies had no idea about GATT, WTO, nothing. And every seed company of India was locked into licensing arrangements on a false claim by Monsanto that they had a patent. They didn't. They can't. In the process, they raised price of seed from 5 rupees a kilo to 4,000 rupees a kilo. The 5 rupee kilo could be saved, and I could save it. It was resilient. It didn't need water. The hybrid BT cotton needed irrigation. It had to be bought every year. It failed in drought-prone areas. And therefore, farmers got very rapidly into debt. And of the 400,000 farmer suicides since the seed monopoly and globalization started, 85% are in the cotton belt, which is 95% GMO BT cotton of Monsanto. So farmer suicides are linked to this false claim. We managed 3 years ago to challenge this, and the government had to intervene.
We have seen a big farmers' movement in India. So what is the possibility of farmers to really stand against these big multinationals and against the power of these multinationals? Who is winning at the end, Vandana Shiva?
Well, you know, death can never win over life because life carries on and death happens once. But life in so much diversity and so much abundance will bounce back. And for me, the image of this is the grass that comes through the concrete. You can't keep it out. Our farmers, in 84, there were protests, and that's what led me to agriculture. 91 onwards, I was going and traveling the country, briefing farmers on intellectual property, GATT, WTO, seed. And we had massive protests, 500,000 farmers saying, seed belongs to us. It does not belong to Monsanto. The current round of protests is because the laws that had been held back since 91, these are not new laws. These were brought and then farmers would defeat them. They were brought and farm. And the World Bank law, you know, World Bank said, get rid of stockholding limits. Get rid of regulation of price. And that is now being brought, and the farmers are saying, no, you take back these laws. When you ask who will win, freedom will always win. How will freedom win? In different ways. Resilience, solidarity, and an amazing commitment. And the farmers on the streets are not fighting an economic battle. They're not talking about price. They're not talking about commercial equations. They're saying we are fighting for the soil and soul of India. Because if we aren't there as peasants, every fourth farmer of the world is an Indian peasant. The true farming of the world, whether it's biodynamic or organic, given by Indian peasants, they know their love for the earth is what has kept the civilization going. Otherwise, India will be like the Midwest. Digital farming, drone spraying, ground up, more commodities, more soya, more corn. Well, it'll be a desert like the Midwest of America is. And they know this. And they're fighting for love for the earth.
So to sum up, Vandana Shiva, this conversation is taking place in the context of the art exhibition Earth Beats, as we already said, here in Switzerland, in Zurich. So if you take a little bit a step back from your work and then you look at the world of arts, what role does art play in all this discussion we are having here related to earth, to seeds, to the power of women and to the power of peasants and of farmers?
Well, you know, art, by its very nature, is creative. Art, by its very nature, has to synthesize and create patterns of coherence. Art, by its very nature, uses the hand. You know, if you were to put out giant-sized prints in a mega, mega robotic factory, would you call that art? No, you would not. You would call it a commercial print. Art is special because it is the coherence of the head and the heart and the hand working in such high levels of integrity that it has direct communication with others whose heads and hearts and hands are working together. So it is a unifying force. And at this point, you know, I'm fortunate that my scientific training was about unity and interconnectedness, both in ecology as well as in my quantum theory. But I'm also very fortunate to be a child of this Indian civilization, which is constantly about oneness and interconnectedness. And at this point, when, in the name of science, so much fragmentation is being done, so much rupture is being done, so much censorship is being done, art is the voice of freedom. It's a voice that will contribute to the opening of the doors for a future world, a possible world.
Publisher, Zürcher Kunstgesellschaft, Kunsthaus Zürich. Idea and Conception, Sandra Gianfrieda and Katrin Hug. Editing and Production, Christoph Keller, Podcast Lab. Production of the jingles, Markus Mäder. This podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer and Audible. With many thanks to Rhiannon Ash, Esther Braun and Sarah Carla Nancy. With support of Swiss Re, partner of Contemporary Art, and Tabaka Indigo Foundation. For this episode, the artist Markus Mäder recorded underwater sounds from the Rhine Canyon next to Versam, where the current moves rocks and sand.